Blog Talk Radio.
Saying sometimes you don't hear it too often, but it carries a lot of weight. Once again, I think I'll say that again. Peace be still. Here for the past 2 weeks, we didn't get together and do a show. And when I thought about it, it's a good possibility that we were just being still. We're just being still and allow peace to kind of take its place and move around us and give us an opportunity to kind of regroup. I suppose when it's been down for 1 week and it being two, but we're back. And I speak of myself, Mark Elliott, Mr. D. Maurice, and Mr. Charles. Together, we put together When Black Men Talk, a provocative talk show that will explore the male's perspective on life, love, and relationships. Always shoot for honest self-evaluation and not shying away from some things that need to be said. This evening, we're going to start out with giving some flowers out. From time to time, we like to give some flowers out to folks, some folks we know, some folks we may not know. But we believe in giving folks flowers and they can smell them and let them know exactly how we feel about them. I hear Mr. Demi Reese clearing his throat up. So that might be a sign that he's ready to give somebody some flowers. Good evening, Mr. Demi Reese. Good evening, Mr. Charles. How are you two gentlemen are feeling?
Doing great, man. Doing great. Thank you.
Mr. Charles, how you feeling, bro?
Hanging in there, brother. Hanging in there. Not too bad. You put myself through.
Yeah, you know what? I'll start with the flowers, man. It's interesting. I have an aunt that's 88 years old. It's my father's baby sister. My father's baby sister. Think about that. Baby sister, 88 years old. And I talked about her show before, Aunt Ruben. And from growing up, you know, we used to go down, basically, some summers, we'd go down to South Carolina. She was in South Carolina. And she would basically turn her house over to us. And I always remember in the morning waking up to hear the breakfast cooking and her in the kitchen putting stuff together. And that always kind of, when I think of it, that's the first thing I think about when I think of the childhood that I had going down to the Carolinas. Well, over the years, Ruby and I have always kept a close, real close relationship. I remember when I worked in South Carolina for a period of time, I didn't live too far away from her. And she just basically, again, opened up her life, her house, whatever she had open to me, and was kind of warning me about certain things that was going on in the Carolinas. And it was so funny. She said to me, be careful with this Carolina woman. I said, oh, Ruby. Then after that, she introduced me to someone that she knew. I said, oh, Ruby, I don't think that's going to work out too good. But just over the years, how we kind of basically always kind of stayed in contact. And I remember years ago, I took my daughter. My daughter's about 16. I took her down, and we hung out for a while in the Carolinas and in Georgia. And I remember then how she basically kind of took my daughter under her wing and was just saying things to her that a young lady needed to hear. So interesting enough, a few months ago, I was talking about Ruby, and she comes from a time where I don't think folks back then really expressed how they felt about someone. You knew they cared about you, but they didn't usually verbalize it too much. So I know one time her and I was going off the phone a couple of months ago, and I said, I love you, Aunt Ruby. And it seemed like she didn't know what to do with it. She didn't come back and say it. And it seemed like it made her a little uncomfortable in a sense. So, you know, we hung the phone up. So move up to about a month ago, and she calls me. She calls me. She wanted to get my sister's information. At the time, my sister in Texas was going through that power outage and storm, and she wanted to check to make sure everything was good with my sister. So ironically, I was in the car with my daughter, and I said this. So we go on speaker, we're talking back and forth, And towards the end of the conversation, she said to me, "You know, I love you, Mark." And that just punched me right in my heart. That right there was like, you think about a month ago when I said it to her, it was so uncomfortable. But within 30 days, she adapted, came back, and I was like, wow. So this evening when we speak of giving someone flowers, not I haven't given her flowers before, if I want to take a bouquet and give it to my Aunt Ruby. Mr. Charles, I'm going to come to you, sir, someone that you want to present flowers to.
There are so many people, you know, so many people that I can give flowers to. But I think I'll do it in a group setting because I was thinking about something as I'm continuing to pursue my book. I was thinking about the type of kid I was. And I wasn't a bad kid, but I had a lot of intellect. Thought I knew a few things. And I wouldn't argue with adults, but some things I didn't think were just right. So you might get a little opinion from me. And I would sometimes have an attitude. So I want to thank my teachers, particularly in high school, and even some in college. We had even recently I had a professor, Jane Ball, and Jane Ball did not play. I still don't understand why she gave me the first grade she gave me in the class. I don't think I deserved that. We won't talk about that. But I had to retake a class from her. And in doing so, I learned a lot about myself. I learned about her and how fair she was. But I also learned that nothing was going to be easy. And then even in, I'm thinking about back to high school, when my senior year in high school, I just was, had a lot going on in my family. And I was kind of angry about a lot of things. That was my year of quitting everything. I was in the marching band. I got in an argument or a disagreement with the band director. So I finished the band camp, and 3 weeks into the marching band season, I quit. They brought me to the office and asked me why I quit and all this other stuff. And I was like, just leave me alone. But I was mad. Then tried out for the basketball team. We had a lot of seniors. Very talented, and I might have made the team. I think I would have made the team, but I said I didn't want to sit bench because we were so talented, so I quit. I quit that. And then I was asked, because of my writing skill, after I quit the band, they asked me to write a composition. The journalism teacher thought I wrote real well, and she asked me to join journalism. But the point of it was she never stopped talking to me, never stopped talking to me. And even with music, when I was in elementary school, I would get mad and storm out the room and all this other stuff. So with all that being said, these individuals collectively did not quit on me, and it could have been so easy for them to do so. So I would like to give them flowers. In fact, my old journalism teacher, she was on Facebook. I reached out to her and told her thank you for not giving up on me, even though I was a knucklehead. But those individuals, and of course my dad and so many others, they didn't quit. When it's easy to quit on a child or a kid, when they kind of give you attitude. But ladies and gentlemen, I say that to you as well, because I'm trying to practice what I preach, standpoint of making sure that I give back to kids and I just discard them or throw them away when they may have an attitude with me. I stick with them, and I'm thankful that those individuals in my life did so.
And Mr. Charles, we got to get you to tell the story about the teacher and the grade, bro. You just can't just skip over that real fast. I know you said it before. Now, you may not want to get into it, man, but we got to hear this one, bro, because if anything, that's a funny story, and I love how she handled it. But, man, give it to us again, bro. Come on, we're waiting.
Yeah, no doubt. Mrs. Jane Ball, which is she was one of DeMaurice's, he was one of her favorite students. You know, I didn't think she liked me at all, but that's what another day.
But, come on, man.
Anyway, okay, we're not even going to get into that tonight. But anyway, I took a class from her, and it was a composition class. And I went in thinking I was okay, doing well or doing okay. And I'm going to class, I'm doing the work, and I'm getting my test back and whatnot. I think I'm doing okay. And we had a discussion about it, but then when I got my final grade, I got an F. I'm like, well, when you get an F, from my understanding, you don't do the work, you don't come to class, you just don't care. And that was none of the things that happened for me. So she gave me an F, and I was like, I don't think I've ever had too many F's in my life that I think I deserve. So she gave me an F. So I was very angry at her for that. And I'm like, you could have gave me a D minus. I could have went on without having to repeat the class. Because once you have an F, you have to repeat the class. So I'm very angry with her because I can't believe you did that to me. Anyway, so I had to retake the class. So I'm mad. So I'm going to show her. I go to the registrar's office or wherever we signed up for the class. And I signed up for the class the next quarter with another instructor. I'm like, I don't care. I just need to. I'm going to show her. I received a note and was asked to come to her office. She was the head of the chair of the department, communication department. So I go to her office and she says, "Are you retaking composition?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "Who are you taking it from?" And I told her the other teacher's name. She said, "Uh-uh." I said, "Excuse me?" He said, "Uh-uh." I said, "Excuse me?" He said, "No, you got to take it from me." And I looked at her like, "What the hell are you talking about?" I didn't say that. My look was, "What the hell are you talking about? I'm not taking it from you. Fail me. You going to fail me again? What could I do differently?" He's like, "You cannot take that from anybody else. I'm changing it so you'll be in my class. Repeat it again." And I was like, "I'm gonna just die. I might as well leave now. I'm gonna call my dad. Just don't get me blazed. Hey, you gonna do the same thing." Anyway, I went back to class mad, angry, and I started doing the work. And some things changed, so it wasn't exactly the same. He changed it up. So at that point, I got mad. So I got determined. I'm like, "I'm gonna show her." So I started doing the work real well. I started to understand more. And she had two different classes, I think two different sessions that she taught, my class and another class. So I'm doing well, midterm, do real well. And then at the end, she brings the two classes together. I think I took the final, did real well. And she makes an announcement. And she says, "There was one person in this class out of the whole two sections that did real well. And they would have an A, but I never give A." She said, "But they kind of slipped a little bit, but still I wanted to acknowledge that person." And she called my name, and I was like, "Oh, my goodness, are you serious?" And she was like, "Yeah," she was very nice about it. And then, of course, some people in the class were saying, they were upperclassmen, they were like, "Dag, boo," whatever, something like that. I said, "Shut up, what's your grade?" Again, that's me, that's my attitude, that's who I am, or who I was, I'm still that person to a point. But I said, "What was your grade?" And then she just talked about it. She said, "You guys, so other people should aspire to be like this young man here." And I went to her and afterwards, and I thanked her after the class, and I thanked her throughout. In fact, when I was trying to go to graduate school, she wrote me a beautiful letter for me to apply to graduate school at the Ohio State University. And I just thanked her. I said, "I want to thank you, first of all, for, again, tolerating and putting up with my attitude and putting up with me. But I also thank you for allowing me to see what I was capable of." And I think I got A minus, B plus, something like that. And I had the highest grade both sessions. So she taught me a lesson that where I was headed, even though we were at a historically black college, it was not going to be easy. And I had to understand that. I had to really understand. I could not slack or give a half effort. I had to come fully strong, and she was not lying. Because when I got to Ohio State University, when I started there, it was they let in that particular class that we had. There was 100 people that came into the class, and it was very prestigious. And there were five African Americans, and there were out of the five African Americans, there were four African American women and myself. So I was the ultimate science project. What was I doing there? All of these questions. But because of Mrs. Jane Ball, she gave me a reality check that made me let me know that I needed to be on the ball, because if I wasn't, they were going to send me home just because. They had the numbers. Now it's like whether or not you stay is up to you.
The oldest man had a way of teaching us lessons, man. And I kind of really believe that's something that we miss for the younger generation today, because who's teaching them lessons? But yeah, they had a way of basically knowing what to do, what to say, and sometimes not even forceful, you know, not forceful, but basically getting us to understand what we need to understand and what we need to do. I always love hearing that story, man. Thanks for sharing it. Mr. DeMaurice, the flowers you're giving out, sir.
Yeah, a quick story about Ms. Ball. I had to go. I asked her for a letter, a reference letter for grad school, and I told her where I was going. And I thought she was going to mail me the letter. You know, okay, I'll mail you that. She was like, oh, no, you got to come see me. So I had to drive 6 hours from Chicago to because I had June Powell, Vernon Courtney, VC, I call him, very cool, and Jay Ball. And I call her last because June Powell and Vernon Courtney were going to mail this. And I had to call them back and say, you know what, just hold it. I'm coming up there to get it. And Vernon Courtney said, you must talk to Professor Ball. And I said, yeah, I talked to Professor Ball. And he just started laughing because he knew that she wasn't going to just mail it. So I had to go up there and meet her for about 3 or 4 hours. And we talked, and she wanted to know my future plans and what I was going to do with my graduate level degree and my current situation and catching up from going to school. But it was worth the trip. It was worth the trip to sit there and talk to her. That's the last time I sat down and actually talked to her and saw her. And it was a great experience to sit down, not as a student in her class, but a young man who she helped develop. So yeah, that's Jay Ball was one of my favorite people. She was hard, but she was one of my favorite people. I got to send my flowers to my uncle, Frederick Douglass Waddell. And I probably had mentioned him before, my father's brother. And the experience I had with him throughout my lifetime, as my uncle, he served as a father figure. And my dad pushed me to look at him as a father figure, too, because that's his older brother. And he is the glue to the family, the Waddell family. And I was talking to his son one day, his youngest son, and he didn't realize all the people that Uncle Fred, the lives that Uncle Fred had touched, because he's the type of guy who will help you out, and he won't mention it. He won't mention it to anybody else. He'll come visit you. He'll call you sometimes. He teases you like no other. I know he teases me. And you know if he teases you and he gets on you, that he loves you. That's his way of telling you he loves you. But when I was getting in trouble back in my early teens and in New Haven, he came up one summer. Him and my aunt Steen, his sister, came up one summer. And they usually visit because we have family in New Haven, too. And I don't know what he saw. And there was a lot of things going on with me, a lot of things that was happening. And I was headed straight to trouble. I knew it. And he saw it. And he said, would you like to come and spend some time in Carolina, you know, go to school and, you know, hang out in Carolina? And I'm like, okay, cool. And my aunt Steen wanted me to come too. She always, and she passed away years ago, but she always looked at me as a son. And I credit him for saving my life, because I don't know where I would have ended up if I didn't take that couple of years to really kind of slow down and kind of think about what I was doing and getting school straight and learning about a different culture and situation that was a little bit slower in the country, but getting some family values. And my father was like, yeah, I think you need to go too and learn some things. And I learned how my father grew up. I was around the people my father, that raised my father, my grandfather. and all the adventures and lessons and funny times down there and hard work that I did being around him. But every time I see him, I go down to Carolina, I see him, and we can look at each other from across the room, and he has that little mean little smile, like he doesn't want to smile, but, you know, we just have that magnetic kind of chemistry. And I start joking with him, he starts joking with me, and it's just a beautiful thing. I love the man dearly. And I remember the last family reunion, because he's really funny. He's just really funny. And they told us to go up to people in the family to tell them, you know, how you feel about them and appreciate them and give them their flowers. And I went up to him and his wife, and I was sitting there, and I gave her a big hug and a kiss on the cheek, and gave him a hug and kiss on the cheek, and he wiped it off like Fred Sanford. And I was like, I love you, and, you know, thank you for, you know, coming and saving my life and what you did for me. And you didn't ask for any money or anything. You were just there for me, and you took me in your household and all that. And he kind of looked back at me and like, have you been drinking? And that's him. You can get off of the metal. You can get off. All buttery and all that stuff, and he'll just come up with a remark like that, and that's his way of saying, yeah, I heard you, yeah, you know, I know what you're feeling, but I ain't going to give you that back. I'm going to give you how I love you back the way I want to. And I was talking to my father recently, and he's slowing down due to age, and I just want to give him his flowers, man. He's a beautiful man, and when I was telling his son, I was like, you know, there was one of my sisters was telling me, you know, used to come and I guess she was having some problems with, you know, buying groceries. She had a couple of kids, and he used to come and visit her and, you know, make sure she was okay because she lived in another town. And he would just go off, drive off in the car, and go visit family and keep the family together. And he's like the glue. He's like the glue to the family. And matter of fact, he's the Django's father. And so they are a lot alike. And if you hear Django, you hear my Uncle Fred, because they are very comical. He has a laugh that could blow the roof off the house when you get him going. And just a beautiful spirit. And I thank the Creator for him, because, you know, he was raised that way, that you know, you keep the family together and you do what you can to help the family. And whenever you need, when you need help, he's there. And now I think he's getting to a point where we got to pitch in and help him and make sure that he's okay. So prayers up for him, and hopefully he gets healthier and healthier and lives a long life.
Thanks for sharing, man. There's nothing like taking time out to give flowers to those that deserve it. You know, I remember going to this church service a few years ago, and this minister was saying, I'm tired of preaching eulogies for hell raisers. He said, you all want me to come in when you know a person with a hell raiser all their life, when they die, treat them like something they were. He said, I can't do it no more. And I subscribe to that theory. I mean, we have some good folks out here, and they're among us. So family, friends, whoever, man, spend some time to basically let them know what they meant to you, how you feel about them. And always give them flowers, man. We should be always doing that at all times. Gentlemen, let's take a little short break. We come back, we're going to change gears a little bit. I want to speak on what I can consider three components that tend to derail marriages and relationships: monogamy, expectations, and reality. We'll spend some time on those. Funny, because the word monogamy itself just kind of basically can start to kind of make people feel a little woozy and uncomfortable, especially men, let's be honest. We hear that word, we kind of it brings along so many different type of connotations to it, and we wonder sometimes if we live up to it. And there's many men faking that they can live up to it, and they know they can't, but they're telling that they can, and it's not happening. So I wanted to spend a little time just kind of addressing that. And I'm not sure, yeah, we probably talked about this in the past, but if we did, maybe we'd do it a little different this evening. The practice or state of having sexual relationship with only one partner. And you think about it for a man, in a sense. You know, Mr. DeVries, you and I were married, and I always kind of say, Mr. Charles, you're my hero, bro.
Stuck to his gun.
You always be my hero, man. Always be my hero. You know, you may not wear a cape, but you're my hero. But anyway, you know, we were married at one period of time, and when you go into it, you know, marriage or a relationship for that matter, you start a relationship or marriage with someone that you believe that you may be with this person the rest of your life. And with that, you take the commitment on mentally and supposedly physically that this is the person and the person and the only person that you have sexual intercourse with until basically you're no longer here. And on the surface, especially when you're young, it, you know, it sounds ideal, it sounds noble, but for most men, and if we're honest at that time, we're thinking, damn, for the rest of my life? Nothing against her personally, but you're thinking, for the rest of my life, this is where my sex is going to come from. And it becomes tough. Not because you may not want to stay with that person for the rest of your life sexually, but I think for men, you know, our flesh is always weak. It's just this. Whether we want to acknowledge it and act like it doesn't exist. And there's some guys do this better, excuse me, than others. But what I have found out over the years, some guys that you think are handling it better than others, they're not. They're just fronting better. But getting back to the flesh, our flesh is weak when it sense. I wonder, I'm going to come to you first with this one, Mr. DeMaurice. Being that our flesh is weak, are we capable in striving to be monogamous, or are we just kind of selling the idea that we can?
I think you can be capable of it if you really, really try and you really, really dedicate and committed to. And but I think sometimes, and I'll just speak for myself, life circumstances kind of beat that wall down of being capable and wanting to, because maybe things aren't going right. Maybe you meet somebody else and go, you know what, she should have been the person that I committed to. It really kind of pushes you to stray. And then, of course, you got to make that decision whether or not you're going to stray or not. I remember talking to a buddy of mine, and he's a minister now, and we were talking a long time ago, and he was saying that he said, if you decide to do this, and talking about getting married, he said, you're going to get to a point where you're going to get weak. And he said, and if you take that chance and cross that threshold, he said, it's like blood to a vampire. Once you get that first taste of blood, that's all you're going to crave. So don't cross that threshold if you don't intend to honor this woman and be there for her. Because and he was talking from personal experience. He was talking from personal experience. And he's like, that's going to be that first bite. That's all you're going to crave. And it's going to make you really kind of have disdain for the one you're with, because, you know, all that new stuff that you're getting is going to take away from your original commitment to this one. So I think if a person wants to do it and they're committed to it and they stay steadfast with it, I think you could be capable of it, but you got to want to real bad. I mean, you got to have a passion for it, because there are going to be some circumstances that you're going to say, and I know you've been there, like screw this, man. I'm doing this. I'm doing this. And if I gotta pay for it, fine. But I ain't passing this up because, you know, what am I going home to and all that? You make up excuses.
Oh yeah.
To do,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you make it up. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
yeah,
you justify it. You will justify it. Ain't no food at home. I got food here.
Oh.
So yeah. You will justify it, you know. Maybe she out there doing whatever, so I'm going to do, you know, you will justify it. So capable, yeah. Reality, it's real tough. It's real hard to do that. It's real hard.
You're right about, you're dead on about a lot of what you said, man, but the justification is, you knocked that way out of the park, because you will sell yourself justification for doing it. And it's not, if the justification doesn't matter, it doesn't add up. It just doesn't. But you will make up excuses in your mind to try to ease your own guilt, because there's some guilt tied to it. There's
mm-hmm.
some guilt, and you will try to justify it. And like your friend said, once you get that, you know, once you open that door and that taste happen, temptation gets greater. It just seems like it knows you're coming. And it gets greater, and it wants to pull you in more and pull you in more and yank you in more. And, you know, it becomes a battle, because you do start to look at the person that you're with, and you're trying to maintain the same feelings and thoughts and trying to balance it, and there's no way possible. There's just no way possible. There really is no way possible. So one has to go, you know, either – I believe that you have to move on and roll that way, or you got to cut that off and focus in on the person that you're with, because you cannot balance the two. And as men, we're greedy. You know, we try to balance the two. We want, the old saying, you want your cake and eat it too. We want that, and we want to be able to try to maintain, and it's not possible. It's not possible. I think my mother said it to me a long time ago, and I've heard it over the years. It's hard to love two. It just is. It's very hard. And it's confusing and crazy to the mind. Grandma might have said that, if I'm not mistaken. But it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but initially the temptation that comes from the beginning, and you're thinking and you justify it in your mind and you feel it's possible. I'm sure there's many men out there that are capable, and we all have the capability whether we do it or not. I'm sure there's many men out there that are approaching it and doing it the right way, and I applaud them. I tip my hat off to them, because lust and temptation affects every man differently. It's not the same. Some men tend to deal with it better. They see through it better. Some men have no thought process of thinking about it. They go straight. But all I will say when it comes to this is being monogamy or whatever, be honest about it. I mean, that's the stuff that really gets in the way, the honesty, because, you know, I just don't think someone should be hurt based on your lack of strength, what you're not able to do. And I remember watching a show, it was called Black Love, I'm not mistaken, a few years ago. And this blew me away. It was a young cat. He was, I think at the time he was going to college, but she was working, and they were living together. And he came home, and he said to her, you know, I'm tempted to have sex with so-and-so. And she could have went off. I mean, she could have went crazy. But she said, no, I want to understand what you're feeling. Why are you being pulled? Why is this happening? And they talked it over and worked it out, and it didn't happen. And I, you know, I'm not saying that's the typical relationship, but I think, you know, when you have a partner, I don't want to say think, when you have a partner, it's sad that a lot of times you can't be completely honest with your partner and say things like that, and you two work through it. And that's communication. That is real communication. It's not easy. But to have someone, and the same for her, that you can open up and share And, you know, at those moments when you're feeling vulnerable, when you're feeling tempted, your mind is there, and you'll be able to speak on it openly instead of acting and trying to hide it. Because even when you do step out and cheat, you're trying to hide it because you're afraid what's going to make you look like to that person. And you don't want to hurt that person either, but you're afraid because the veil, the cover is being pulled off you. So that's your reason for really trying to cover it up and do more. And it becomes a game. It becomes a game because now you're out of pocket of who you really are, who you present yourself to this person that you were. And now you're doing everything you can. Now, on top of that, fighting the temptation and playing the game and acting like you are monogamous when you're not. Mr. Charles, when it comes to you, our flesh is weak. So does that make us capable or incapable of basically maintaining and striving to be monogamous? Or are we just kind of out there basically trying to sell something that's not realistic?
No, I agree. I think that it's just that we are capable, but there are a lot of factors, and young men definitely covered a lot of it. But part of it, too, though, is, let's be real, is the woman plays a major part. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy regardless, but as DeMarie said earlier, if you feel like there's some issues at home, there's some things that keep pushing you away, then oftentimes men feel as if they can only do so much, you can only take so much. And then at some point you think there's a breaking point. And you want to say, no, I won't do that. I'm dedicated, this is my wife, whatever. But we all have breaking points. And if the other person, particularly your mate, is not not working with you and not giving you, not looking at you in a certain way or not even working with you to get through this, like you mentioned before, that for people work through it because the person was honest. I think honesty is very key, because that person needs to know how you're feeling. It's easy to say, well, she ain't paying attention. Women say that too to men. Well, he didn't catch the clues. Clues, really. At some point you have to grow up and just say what you need to say. And then that gives that person a chance to really see if they're really dedicated, and you go from there. And if it's not the case, when you want to continue on, then you move on without really trying to hurt one another. But to answer your question, I think we have the capability, but there are a lot of factors in there that make it a little easier. And you come back to that old thing of people growing apart, or, sometimes we have some of our brothers that go, my wife is not the woman she was when I married her, and all this other stuff. There's no spark. And I always come back to the old adage, you should at least try before you give up. And I'm not saying that's not, it happens. Things happen when you go apart from people, but damn, did you try to make a spark? Maybe some things are unsavable. You can't save them. I'm good with that, but you got to at least try. But I do think it's in us. It's just hard as hell, especially when you don't have a cooperating party alongside you. Very hard, very difficult.
As I said earlier, we get to the point where I think you're going to have to make a choice. And a lot of times we refuse to make that choice, make a step and move on. And I think even sometimes when we meet people, we're afraid to tell them, hey, this is who I am. This is what I do. And it's not based on X, Y, Z. It's just where I am. And then when I became divorced, that was always what I stated right up front. You got to understand, everybody's not going to understand what you're saying and believe, and they'll take it and think, you're just trying to do this, you're trying to do that. But I'd rather give it to you up front and present it to you, and you can take it and do whatever you want to do it at that point. But I'm not going to hide the fact from, this, what I'm feeling is, I'm experiencing this, I want to let you know. If you ain't going to find out later, if I ain't going to run to you and tell you, it's going to come out of my mouth. And when I said earlier about making a choice, I knew when I basically was ready to walk away from a marriage, when I knew that I could no longer hold myself for her, I knew it was time to go. I just knew at that point that was part of the reason why I knew it was time to go, because And I said to her, I can no longer be the man you need me to be. And knowing that, you know, I could have hung out and basically played the charade game and do that. Because I laugh sometimes. I look at these cats, they get caught, you know. And to me, if you want to do wrong, be a pro at it. And I say that not to say to gloat, but again, if you want to be, you should be a pro at it, because you don't want to hurt the people that's not really that need to be hurt, because then you're being weak. I'm gonna give a quick example of something, and it's not based on cheating, but it was a woman at work that I dated. We dated for a short period of time, and to me, if I'm going to deal with you, there's got to be a level of coolness about you. It just has to be. I mean, that's just what it is. And sometimes you speak on cool. Sometimes the person's cool enough, you don't have to speak on it. But her and I hung out for a short period of time. So about a year or two after we hung out, was a buddy of mine. He never knew. Buddy of mine. He works there as well. Never knew her and I hung out. But now he's trying to talk to her. He's trying to. So he said to me, he said, you know something? She always speaks so highly of you. She's always asking about you. And he couldn't understand it. And I just said to him, yeah, that's nice. And what I mean by doing something professional, we both work at the same spot, but there's no one else's business what we do. We decide to get together as an adult. No one else has to know. No one has to have to be influenced. It's what we do as adults. So I say that to say, if you're going to cheat, you know, and you're going to do that, I'm not saying you're right to do it, but be a professional about it. Handle your business in a certain manner that's not sloppy, that's not where basically everybody knows and it's chatter. That's some simple shit to me. So with that being said, I think a lot of times, Mr. Charles, I'm coming at you with this, I think men are afraid to tell women, hey, you know, I desire to be with more than one. I mean, right off the bat, when you're dating, you're at the Starbucks and you're sipping, whatever the case may be, you know, they're afraid to say, look, this is what I'm feeling. This is where I am. You know, like, this is what I'm living. Why is it that men are afraid to just open up and be honest about it?
Wow. That's a million-dollar question. So I think that, one, there's a perception, first of all, that a lot of men have that how a woman will react to certain things. I think there's a perception. And therefore, one, there's a perception that something like that will not be accepted. So with that in mind, I think a lot of men, some men will feel disappointed, will feel dejected because of the woman's response. But I think that's, and I'm going to go here for a minute. I'm not trying to say I'm the macaroni and the whole gang, but I was told one time that's the difference between, you know, when we hear about stuff in the streets and whatnot, difference between a player and then a Mac. And then the whole point of it, if on the real talk, that if a player is a guy is always trying to run game and do some things and try to confuse people and run game. And even regular guys, they don't have the oomph to go in and tell a woman what they really want. But the definition of a Mac that I received from OGs, as they say, was the fact that a Mac tells a woman, and when I say Mac, it's a guy that he's honest with the woman. He doesn't play games. He tells her what's on his mind. And then instead of trying to convince her or something like that, then he doesn't do that. He literally tells her. So if it's like he wants to be with one, he likes being more than one woman, he literally tells her what it is. And he lets her make the choice as to what she wants to do. Now, she might come off and go, she might decide to go, hey, That's crazy. Are you nuts? This is not. I don't do nothing like. I will never do anything like that. And you might get a very crazy response. But the true Mac goes, okay, whatever. He's going to let her make a choice because in the end, there might be some women that go, you know what? As long as you are honest, as long as you don't do anything crazy, and you don't disrespect me. And I know what's going on. They might be open to it because of the fact that they have been treated so poorly by other men that, hell, that might be a great opportunity for them because you're not always pressing them. Your time is your time, and it's special. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's what it is initially, but then you got to come back to the point. You have to be willing to lose or roll the dice. You have to be able to lose that person. You have to be willing to roll the dice and accept what the answer is. I think that's what a lot of men are afraid to do. They are definitely afraid to resist that to a woman because of the woman's response.
There it is. You know, they want to kind of, again, have the cake and eat it too, so they're kind of trying to find a way. And what they don't realize is that a lot of time, when you're not upfront about it and you're doing that, eventually, like I said, you're going to get sloppy with it, you're going to get caught, and there goes your drama. And then you stand back and act like you don't know why drama has presented itself. It's just all her. So basically, you lied, you know, you manipulated and to get what you're trying to get more than likely to try to get into your bed. And, bro, you should have to do all that to get that. If that can't come with honesty, then it's just not meant for you to have. But you're right. It's just that they want to kind of hang on to and have that, and they're afraid that they say that they can't have. And like you said, the Mac itself, he's just honest, just out there speaking. He's not about playing and trying to run game and do all that. But I will say this, as crazy as it is, a lot of women – like the player. They ain't going to admit it, but they like the drama that comes with the player. And I guarantee you, that ain't me. Because there's too much freaking drama out there for it not to be most of y'all. It's way too much drama. Because to me, I've seen situations, I've been around situations to where you know when the drama's getting started. So you got a choice. When the drama's getting started, you can go on in the door with the drama, or you can walk the other way. And the bulk of them walk right through and want more drama and act like they don't want it. Mr. DeMaurice, why are men afraid to say to women, you know, this is who I am. I may want more than one.
Well, I think everything that Charles said is correct. And I think also is because, you know, when you attract a woman and you get her to believe in you and trust you and all that, you don't want to be exposed for who you really are. Because let's be honest, for a lot of men, we do a song and dance and we put on a show to try to attract that woman and get that woman. And then realize once we get that woman that, okay, we got her, the hunt is over. She is bought in, and then we become attracted to someone else. And, you know, as part of us don't want to hurt her, but another part of it is that we don't want to be exposed to who we really are. And so to try to live in that facade of who we made her think that we, you know, the person we are, we try to hide it. We try not to expose it because you have put all this time and commitment into coming up with this facade, and now you got to keep the act going in order to keep her because you weren't honest at the beginning. So now you got to keep it going, and you got to remember the lies and all the stuff that you told her and all the actions that you did to get her and to keep her, and so because you don't want to lose her. And maybe the other woman is just a woman that you just want to play with, and you know you got a good thing. But instead of just saying, you know what, let me commit to this good thing, I want to have my cake and eat it too. I'm going to play, And I want to have what we call now a side piece in case, you know, I get an appetite and the main is not kind of cooperating. I got somebody I can go to you know, get my desires and or get off on. So, you know, I think it's a lot to do with exposure, being exposed.
I think, too, the older generation may not have said it verbally, but they kind of implied and kind of showed that one is just not enough. And I think a lot of men picked up on that, and we took it to a new level. Removed expectations, in a sense, a strong belief that something will happen. And I think sometimes we're in relationships, marriages or whatever, and I think sometimes we're expecting way too much from our mate. And when I approach this question, Mr. Charles, I want to stay from the male perspective because, you know, we can probably talk for 3 days about what we would expect from us that we may not give them. But I wonder sometimes when we step into relationships, are our expectations a little too high? Because, you know, I know there's some things that I think there should be naturally, there are natural expectations that you feel that should be there just on the basic foundation. And when they're not there, you're like, holy moly. So are we, in a sense, you know, our expectations sometimes are a little too high based on what we might be trying to have in a relationship?
In today's world, yes. Yes, in today's world. The things have changed. Women are more independent. Women are doing their own thing. Women feel as if they often say they don't need a man. They say that all the time, but then they're home by themselves, lonely, talking about, I wish I had somebody or whatever it may be. But as you mentioned, the way it grew from back in the day, they might have had more than one. But even if there was more than one, most times, oftentimes, I would say, people knew, and I want to say this badly, let me construct this the right way. Certain women accepted their role. How about that? That's what I want to say. They only accepted their role. And if their role was they knew that they were the wife or they were the number one, then that's what it was. I know in my family specifically, I had older cousins or relatives that were married or they had a main lady, but then they had the so-called extra woman or the side piece that they call them now. But the extra woman knew her place. And sometimes the main lady knew the extra woman, knew of them. But they were not threatened because the man had to make sure that his main lady was felt comfortable and knew that nothing, this was not going to break it up. Now, I'm sure that took a hell of a man to me to be able to pull that off. To be able to pull that off and keep it running like that, that's a hell of a man. So not saying everybody's accepting it's the right thing to do for many, but you could do that. But now in today's world, it's like, and I don't want to say you need to know your place, or a lot of women would not accept their role. Because eventually, as we see it now, for the most part, the side piece wants to know when is she going to become number one. Back in the day, people could just say wrong. They're like, you know what, this is cool. Everybody's good. We're not coming. We're not breaking bread. We're not having Thanksgiving dinner together. But they accepted their role. Now it's like, I thought you said you was going to leave her. I'm working on it. Then it all goes to hell. It's a different time. That's what I'll leave that right there.
Wow, man. That is right there. You ain't kidding me, right there, because that's very true. It's very true. And back in the day, when I had this to that as well, knowing their role, they didn't want to cause confusion for the guy and his family. And, you know, they kind of basically didn't want things to kind of get out of pocket. So long as they were getting what they were basically promised, there was no reason for them to step outside of their role. You know, I remember my sister that passed a while ago, and she said something to me. We first started knowing each other. It was after a year or a while. I mean, we knew each other well by then, but she said something to me that I thought was interesting, that she dated a married man for several years. And when on the surface, when I hear that, I go, okay, why would she do such? But the more we talked about it, you know, she had three kids. So there are certain things that he provided outside of just the romance part that she needed and she wanted. And those are the things he helped her out with. I'm not here to say it's right or wrong, but that goes into what Mr. Charles is saying about knowing the role and not basically, you know, understanding what's coming, what's not coming. And at the same point, not basically getting to the point where it's blown up to where, you know, trying to be the number one or whatever the case may be. Mr. DeMaurice, we come into you with the expectations. Sometimes the relationship can be that we're expecting too much from our mate.
Yeah. Or expecting the things that got us committed in the first place. I remember, I never forget when my ex-mother-in-law said a long time ago, and she said it to her daughter, she said, the things that you do to get them has to be the same things you do to keep them. So once you start changing, don't be surprised if you lose them. And I never forgot that. It's a chill down my spine because I think I talked about my ex-mother-in-law before, a very charming lady, a very, you know, well-to-do, you know, prim and proper. And when she laid that down, I knew that she had a little hood in her. She had a little hood in it, and she knew, you know, what as Bernie Mac said, what the goings-on was. And she was like, the same thing you're doing, because she saw that she was doing a lot. The same thing you're doing to get him is going to be the same thing that he's going to expect throughout this. So if you change it up and you give less, then you're going to get less. And so I think one of the things that when people start off relationship, the sex is good, the sex is anytime you want, all that other stuff, you know, you're doing the things that, you know, to attract everything. And then once you feel like you got him or got us, oh, I ain't got to do all that no more. I ain't got to worry about it anymore. I got him. He ain't going nowhere. To the contrary, if you start off like that, you better be able to maintain it. And so I think the expectations, we have those expectations that the same things you did, what you were wearing, how you were dressing, how were you conducting yourself, how you were treating, how you were making the dinners and you know, just being there and all that stuff is stuff that we expect. And soon, and you know, we've been married. As soon as we get married, boom, it's done. It's like, what happened to the person that I married that was doing all this stuff? This person is not the one that was doing all this stuff. And then you leave the door open for somebody else to do those things to attract you. And, yeah, we expect – I think we have expectations. Whether or not we get what we expect is, you know, hit or miss. But, yeah, we have a lot of expectations as men to get all the stuff that you said you were going to give and that you were given and minus the drama that you weren't given at the beginning of the relationship. And so we expect that. And when we don't get it, then it's like, okay, this is a big disappointment. I got tricked. Or I hear a lot of guys say, I got trapped. I got trapped into doing this, you know, because this is not the same thing that I wasn't expecting all these problems and drama and all this other stuff. I was expecting the stuff that you started out with. And you want me to do it, but you don't want to do it.
I think we do, man. I think realistically, especially now with current day times, because Mr. Charles, you know, when he spoke earlier about how things are different. And one major thing that is different now, maybe compared to the past, is selfishness. And with that being said, for me, there is no expectations anymore. You know, you expect someone to basically to care, nurture you, make sure you're good, tend to your welfare, your well-being. Those are kind of like basic, to me, elementary expectations. But to expect them, I think, is a little bit too much. I think they should come naturally. And when they don't come naturally, you deal and adjust with what's there. You make a decision. You know, when you see that they're not coming naturally with no expectations, you say to yourself, okay, how far am I willing to go with this? How far am I really to kind of hang with this? I can play, and that's cool. But I already knowing that what's not here, I'm not going to expect it and expect it later. Because realistically, the first 6 months sometimes, first to 7 months, when you meet someone, you're meeting Angela Bassett. You mean actress. You're meeting an actress that's basically showing you what you may potentially want, what they think you may want, what is going to soothe you, excite you, and it's all there. So that's acting that you're getting. The true actress is there. And I'd rather you stop the acting. I'd rather you just be who you are. It is what it is. Say what you got to say. And it's like, let the chips fall where they may. Because then I have an opportunity to just say, you know what? This is it. And something my grandmother said to me, ma'am, I'm pretty sure she might have said it to you too, Mr. DeBrees. And she said it numerous times. But I always was amazed sometimes at her because she wouldn't look at me when she say this. But she would say, Mr. March, if it ain't in them, it's not in them. What'd you say, Grandma? Mr. Mark, if it's not in them, it's not in them. If it's not in her to be a housewife with your expectations, damn it, bro, it's not in her. So no matter how good she looked, no matter whatever, you know, how her body shape, whatever it is, if it's not in her to do those things, it's not there. So you having the expectations because you feel a certain way about her, it's almost your fault. Because some of the things that we want, like I said, the natural expectations that we have, they should just happen with no conversation. None. Nothing has to be talked about. You shouldn't say to her, well, you know, I like to have this. That should be it. You know, I remember a while ago, I dated someone that she knew I like to have my back washed. No. Okay. She would pick and choose when to come wash my back. And that's fine. That's your choice. But let me just say this to you. Don't come to me later and say, why haven't we elevated to XYZ? Because there's things that you just don't want to do that I know that are in you. But don't think because those things are not in you, I don't want those things. So I'm going to accept what you give. If that's what you want to give, I'm good with that for now. But that for now may never exceed more than for now. So I'm good with that. I'm hoping that you're good with it. Expectations. In general, Mr. DeBrees, you know, when we have expectations, and this might be a question I answered already, but I'll ask it anyway. We have expectations. And you're up against someone. And you do, let's just say you decide to say to them, I like this, I like that. She would be willing and generally willing to think that they're going to make self-adjustments. Or are we kidding ourselves?
Kidding ourselves, man. Ain't going to make the adjustments. Been there, done that. Nah.
Yeah.
And say, well, you know I don't do that. You knew who I was when you got this. You know, so I mean, when I got that message, I'm like, okay, cool. That if that's what I'm expecting, you can't honor that. Then okay, I gotta make a decision. I gotta make a choice now. You just said you can't do it. Am I right? Right. Okay. This is what I expect. So now I gotta make a choice.
So your kitchen was closed. I was hoping you play that song. Don't worry about what I eat.
This is what I went into it. This is what I went into it for. And you knew that's what I wanted. You might have done it, you know, a few times just to get me in, but now you say, you know, you ain't capable of doing it now, which I know you are, but you're not going to do it. Okay, cool. I got to make a decision now. I got to make a business decision.
Mr. Charles, should we be, you know, in general thinking that they're going to make self-adjustments?
No. Nope. Been there, done that as well. Got to a point even where I was like, well, let me check it out for maybe and see maybe they will. But, and there are women out there that will let you know that they want to be taken care of. They don't want to work. They want to be taken care of. They want to be a wife. And then if you're going to be a wife and stay at home and then you don't cook, oh, hell no. What you doing? What you doing all day? For real. I mean, I know, whatever. I mean, all women have to do that, but if you make a choice to do what you decide to do, that's what you do. But no, because you can spend a long time thinking somebody's going to change, and they don't. And then you can waste a lot of time, even just, but like you said, if you plan, then you can play. You can play for a long time. But if you ever think that they're going to change, they'll let you know. If you get to the point where you go, we're finally going to turn the corner and make this real, right? And they might lead you on for a little bit, give you a little understanding, as my uncle would say, lead you on to thinking this is going to improve. It doesn't. And that's who they are. Like you said early on, that we end up meeting the representative. You can meet the representative for a long time. And then all of a sudden when it gets real, you're like, yeah, no. So, but DeMaurice hit right on the head saying, how long are you going to stay? You got to make a decision. You can keep playing with it. Miss out on some great things. I think that was probably one of my issues. I stayed somewhere too long. Had a person with a little work could have been great for me. Dedicated. She's the ride or die. But I like that shiny penny, and it cost me. Anyway. Shiny penny is always the best thing for you.
That's what happens a lot of times, man, is that as men sometimes we get locked into potential and we see the potential and we think this is a little fine tuning and a little adjustment here, and then you're kind of waiting around for those adjustments to take place and they don't happen. They just don't happen. And you're left thinking, damn, I wasted, you know, I was thinking, and why can't that just be, and I'll go back to what my grandma said, if it ain't in them, it ain't in them. And sometimes the quickest you can determine that, the quicker you can determine that, and then, you know, make your decisions based on that, you know, you're better off because your expectations aren't high. You're basically floating along. You know what you're getting. You know where you are. And you kind of predetermine your head where it's going to go. You know, and you roll. And the good thing about that is that your disappointment is very low. Very low. There's no disappointment. But you walk around with a smile on your face like, yeah, this is good. Reality. The state of things that actually exists, as opposed to, this is the key here, as opposed to the idealistic idea. Now, you know, I'm wondering, you know, can we deal with reality in a way where we can find a way, Mr. Charles, to deal with, to achieve happiness and joy as a couple?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. Not really sure because, like you said, you have to be – I think it takes two people, special people, that want to do it, though, that want to be committed to one another, want to work at it in regards to the reality. because there are a lot of people out there that, like you said, you think that it's going to get better, or it's going to be better than what it is, and they will even tell you that, you know how I feel, but their actions don't lie, man. Actions don't lie, and you'll see soon enough whether or not they're real. I don't want to make it too simple, but I equate it to those that watched Charlie Brown back in the day. Charlie Brown always come up to Lucy. She had the football. She always tells him, come on, Charlie Brown, take the football. Mm-hmm. He used to get all prepared, limbering up, getting ready, run up to the football. Right when he got there, she pulled the football. Every time he kept running up there, she never let him kick the football. That's about as real as it gets. Some people never going to let you kick that football, bro. You always pull the ball, bro.
Oh, my goodness, man. Mr. Demon, he's, oh, Charlie Brown. Oh, can we deal with reality and find a way to achieve happiness? Enjoy as a couple.
I think if people, if a couple wanted to deal with the realities of the situation, they can. But sometimes you're with someone who just in love with ideas, or the idea of being married, or the idea of all this fantasy around being married and being a couple to kind of play the part out there in front of people when you know it's not that way at home. So. It's usually one person is dealing with reality, the other is not, and or both of them are dealing with the idea of faking it till they make it. But when you have two people who can deal with the reality of a situation, then you got two people who can make adjustments and try to make things work with the reality. You can always work with reality. Ideas, you don't know where it's going. You don't know where it's coming from. You don't know where it's going to go. So when you can't really kind of look at and face reality, that's a slippery slope, bro. That is a very slippery slope.
I remember going back to something Mr. Charles said a little while ago. It was interesting because I remember this lady and I lived together for a short period of time. And I always say, you don't know the one until you really live with them. And if you were someone's space and you're there on a constant basis, and you see some things where your eyebrows just kind of turn up and your eyelash get in your eye and you can't see it real good after you see it. And so, you know, we have some disagreements on certain things living together. But what I found interesting was if my family was doing something, she wanted to show up and act like everything's hokey-dokey. And I said to her, no, you're not going. Because I'm not walking out here and visiting the front like you and I clicking and we're knocking it down on all cylinders when our shit is raggedy. It is. So you can play that game, but I'm not playing it. Because, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, it's a front to put on. You want to go, you know, you act like, you know, and then you come home and it's like, what the hell is going on here? So, you know, that's reality. And I think that, you know, if you're going to be in it, you know, both sides should really make a serious conscious effort to make things work. You self-adjust, you sacrifice, do what you got to do. If not, you're playing yourself. You're kidding with yourself. You really are. Something I want to ask you two gentlemen, because I noticed this quite a bit. Excuse me. Let's just say, you know, hypothetically, you were married and you got caught cheating on your spouse. Now, you know, you two decide you're going to move on and stay together. Are you willing to stay together and repent for years to come? Are you just going to basically say, well, maybe this might be a cue for me just to kind of move on, Mr. DeMarines?
I think it's a clear sign that you got to move on, because it ain't, to me, it's not ever going to get to the point where it was at that high point in that relationship. That's always going to be a dark cloud over your head. And I know from personal experience dealing with women in relationships, they ain't going to let it go. Soon as something doesn't go right, they go praying.
Yeah.
And yeah, why don't you do such and such and such an old so-and-so and so. I'm like, I thought we were past that. No, they ain't going to never. It's going to be like the big joker in the deck that she's going to pull out every time she needs it to put it up in your face. And so if you get caught, I saw that brother in, you know, the brother you sent me the article about, I guess, who always does the videos in his car and stuff. And I'm watching him. I never really listened to him. And then everybody kept buzzing about, you know, his story and stuff. And I'm like, looking at him and his wife and the apology, and the wife don't even look right sitting there. I'm sitting there looking at it like, bro, you just need to go. Because I wouldn't be able to sleep next to you. I wouldn't be able to trust you making my food at that particular time. We talked a few weeks ago about you know, my grandmother and my aunts in the women's council on Sunday night. People were getting stuff in their food. They were being treated a certain way. I know. They forget jack. So I learned from them, not just relationship, but from them. Once it goes bad like that, oh, they're going to get back. And it may take a whole lifetime, but they're gonna punish you. They're going to bring it up, and they ain't going to let it go. So you might as well go. Once you get caught cheating, leave, go, because it ain't going to get back to where it was, and you always going to be trying to make up for it, and you can't. Can't make up for it. That's it. It's over. You have burnt up that trust. And I don't care what women say. No, you have eliminated that trust from the relationship, and it's all about the get back for them. I know the women that I've experienced and I've seen, and friends of mine and family members, it's all about the get back.
Yeah, I know some cats, man, that are living this, and I look at them, and they can never do enough. And they're not happy, but out of a sense of obligation, they're trying to do what they feel is the right thing. And I'm not saying what they're doing is the wrong thing, but you have to determine, do you want to repent for this? Is it worth it? And if it's not, you may want to go a different direction. Because like you said, it's going to kind of always find its way into something, somehow, some way. And I'm not saying it shouldn't, but, you know, I see a lot of men that been, you know, done something outside. Now they're trying to prove it to her, everyone's around, that they're better. And a lot of times what they do, even with this cat that you're speaking of with the video, now they put God first. Like she said, God forgave my husband. No, did you forgive your husband? God is always going to forgive your husband. The question is, did you forgive him? Don't tell people what God has done. We all pray to him, but, you know, you assume. But I ain't saying because I'm sure God did forgive him, but sis, did you forgive him? And if you look at that video, him holding her hand, she ain't forgive that brother.
Sometimes you see that uncle having a good time at the family gathering.
Oh, please.
And then
please.
The wife kind of cut the eye at him, and he just stopped talking, stopped laughing. Because now I think about it, like, why he just shut down like that? That's probably something she holding over her head, like, you're having too much of a good time. You need to you need to bring it down.
Thank you.
Because I'm like, yeah, Uncle So-and-so was just laughing, having a good time. Now he's just sitting up in the corner by himself. What happened? Bruh,
And I've seen it. I've seen it with relatives. I've seen it with friends. I've seen it to where they just spend. It's like, and they're deep down inside, they're miserable. They are. But the man is trying to, and what happens now, they have that on you. Oh, bro, there's going to be no peace. You can forget that. I know I said earlier, peace be still. Peace all over the place. Peace flying around like a thunderstorm, like a tornado. There will be no peace. There will be no peace. So, I mean, and I'm amazed that a lot of men will live under that. And based on the guilt that they're experiencing, they're feeling based on what happened, they will just succumb to that, live under it, and it becomes their life. It becomes their life, and it's like, you know, she's calling you constantly. Everything you do is monitored, you know. And then we have all these situations where it is true, man. Today I'm not a married man. But if I was, there ain't no way in the world you're going to be tracking my phone. And you got guys with their phones being tracked. They know where you are. Today. If you can't trust me to go to the supermarket, then what we doing? If you can't trust me to tell you, I'm going to tell you I'm at one spot, then what are we doing, bro? What are we doing? That type of insecurity is not good for anyone. It's not good for her. It's not good for you. Now, your act brought that on, so you two need to decide. But I just don't see that as a comfortable way or a way of less stress that's good for you, your situation, your body, to live under. I just don't get it. And that's not to say what he did was wrong. I mean, right, whatever the case may be. I understand that. But sometimes in life you have to cut and move forward. You cut, move forward. You just don't kind of basically stick the knife and just stay there and keep bleeding, keep bleeding, keep bleeding, keep bleeding. Sometimes you put a Band-Aid on, you go forward. A little alcohol, a little Neosporin, you go forward. Mr. Charles, you know, you're in a situation, you know, you're married, you're having an affair. Are you staying and repenting, or what are you doing, bro?
Well, a lot of times things, people stay because they have children involved, but knowing that she's never going to let you live that down, and it just makes you think you got to move on. You do, because it's always going to be on top of you, and you got to do some things that you got, as I said, that you got to check in. You got to do a lot of different things. It just kind of goes like. You know, it would have to be very. I want to say you want to stay because that's what we were trained to do or talked about years ago. But with this modern day society, probably be best for you to just kind of walk away because of the factor that gonna be too much involved, and gonna change who you are, change your relationship.
Yeah, Mr. Charles, I'm sorry, Mr. DeMaurice, man, we got a little bit of time left. I'm going to go to some questions for Mr. Charles, if you do have anything. I'll come to you first, Mr. DeMaurice.
Yeah, my question this week is, why is it that the more religious a woman is, or a Christian woman, because that's who I see a lot of social media, public, things of that sort, why are they seem to be the most scandalous when it comes to extramarital affairs, a lot of things? Why do they seem to be the most scandalous than women that, you know, really aren't that religious or putting on that cloak that they're, you know, a Jesus freak, for lack of better terms?
My quick answer to that is this. A lot of women that are claiming to be religious are claiming that because that's what they told they should be. When they were young, it was given to them, mother, auntie, sister, and they can't live up to that. They can't. So they're living two lives in a sense. They're trying to please what's been given to them. Because to me, no one gives you religion. You find it for yourself. And when you find it for yourself, you live it a certain way. There's certain things you're just going to be uncomfortable doing, you're not going to do. But when it's suppressed upon you as a little girl, a little boy, and this is the only way you should be living, blah, 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 then when you can't do it, you're trying to live true to what was given to you. But at the same time, when nobody's looking, you're living wild and crazy. But you're trying to hold up a banner that you can't hold up. Mr. Charles, your response.
Yeah, well, I think you're right on it. It's that facade that you women, certain women work with, the men too, but certain women have this fairy tale, this thing that this facade they're supposed to live up to. And deep down inside, it's the pressure or whatever they decide there, they succumb to it, and they just, once they get into it, they get loose. He's saying that everybody got a little freak in them. I said, you know, my dad told me that a long time ago. But I think because of the fact that it's church and people are religious, that you think, oh, Sister Johnson would never do that. Okay, Sister Johnson, like to get that in too, more than you know. But I think the pressure of religion, the pressure of so many different things, trying to be right, and then also really buying into, really caring about what other people think. We know how that goes across the various churches. You know, she ain't nothing but this, she ain't this. They really will do almost anything, some people, to make sure that the church sees them in a certain light. And once they get loose sometimes, it's like, while other people, other women may not have those expectations on them, like, you know what, I'm going to just be me and got to worry about who thinks whatever about me. I'm going to do what I do because I don't have that burden on my shoulders.
Mr. Demetri, your response, sir?
Yeah, it always, I don't know why it surprises me, but it always surprises me. It always surprises me that the folks that are holier than thou, maybe they just want to present themselves as better than everybody else, or that they're living better or living right. But I don't know why it still surprises me, but it seems like the majority of them that, you know, once we get behind closed doors, it's like this total different person that they're presenting outside of, outside of that religious kind of realm or institution or whatever. I don't know why it surprised me, but it still happens. And I'm not really sure why, but it's just, it seems like the more religious you are, the more that freak comes out when the situation allows itself.
Yeah, we're down to a couple of minutes, so I wanted to say this before kind of move forward. Yeah, there's a lot of people that's just living to kind of basically please others and not please themselves. And with that being said, they put themselves in situations that they believe that they should be in, but they're not happy. So whenever they get the chance to kind of open up a door to do something totally different, they're out there doing it. And then to a sense, in a way, and it sounds kind of strange to say, some people that have taken what they were doing outside, you know, the clubs or whatever, they've taken that same energy and they brought that to church. The same drama, the same game playing, all of that. They brought it in, they mixed it in, and then you get that. But they want to present you and sell you, okay, I'm X, Y, Z. But a lot of things that they needed to let go that made their life exciting in their mind, they're bringing that with them, and they're hanging on to it. And therefore, there it is. But they'll present to you a certain, you know, frame mind and frame set that they're doing certain things, but in reality, they're not. And I understand why you keep being disappointed, because it's not the way things are supposed to be. You know, it's not the way that it's supposed to be, but we live in a world now that a lot of things aren't supposed to be the way they're supposed to be. They don't stand up to. Mr. Charles, man, we'll give you two questions next time, boss. We're a little less than 60 seconds here, so we're going to be ready to jump out. Gentlemen, good to have us back. We'll get together again next week. We'll do it again. It's When Black Men Talk. Of course, Mr. Charles, Mark Elliott, Mr. D. Maurice. It's evocative talk. We're not afraid to basically open up and share our ideas, our thoughts, our feelings. We'll continue to do so. Thank you for giving us a listen. Thank you.